Caltech invented the concealed carry category years ago with the P11, but did they stop there? Heck no. One innovation just led to another and another, and, well, just look at their latest, the P15. It's the lightest, thinnest, double-stack 9mm handgun on the market at only 14 ounces and 7/8 inches wide. The P15 has a 4-inch barrel and double-stack magazine that holds 15+1 total capacity. Its gator grip texture on the polymer version increases stability and makes for ambidextrous grip safety and easy, accurate handling. If you prefer a more vintage look, choose the metal version with classic wood panels and textured grips. The P15 has a Tritium Plus fiber optic front sight with a fully adjustable Tritium 2-dot rear to keep you on target in any situation. Make the P15 your choice for concealed carry. Learn more at KeltechWeapons.com. Sign up for the Keltech Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories at KeltechWeapons.com. That's KeltechWeapons.com.
There's no corruption here at all. This is totally normal. Joe Biden had no role whatsoever in his son's business or knowledge of it.
But right.
How would, I mean, that seems false.
Yeah, I think that's categorically false. I think that he was aware of Hunter's business. He met with Hunter's business partners. You found a letter that illustrates that he knew me.
And he's thanking you. He's thanking you for his efforts.
So I think that was,
efforts. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's not factually right.
Of course it's not. I mean, we were just talking here before we're going to break about how soul-sucking this news cycle is. Yeah. It is absolutely soul-sucking. It makes me want to jump off my roof because you have... The lay of the land is you have all of these entirely obvious stories, right? You have these obvious stories about Devin Archer. And I mean, the stuff that we've seen that's come out of his discussion, his testimony before Congress, you know, you've seen all of the emails and everything from Hunter Biden's devices and all of this stuff. And then yesterday, what did we get? And I wasn't joking. You got wall-to-wall aerial coverage of a sham indictment, and we're not even talking about all of the other Biden stuff. And it is so, it's designed to make you just give up. It is. It's designed to make you give up. That's why I'm like, weekends, take your little break, and then you come back to it on Monday. So we're going to get you set up for the weekend. Because you can't. You'd rather have too much of this nonsense to deal with than none of it at all. Welcome to the program, Dana Lash here with you, your lovable curmudgeon. Top of this first hour on Friday. And that's kind of that's the absolute dominant story for all of this, all day today, is this, oh, everybody's been talking about this, oh, the Debbie Turner winning, and he's arraigned. And he goes back towards the end of the month, right? That's the next time they're all in court together, is towards the end of the month. And that's going to be another aerial thing. Oh, yeah. And then you have the debate over all of the charges. And there's, you know, a couple of pieces up at the newsletter, chapter and verse, that gets into this. Because there's, you know, and then we get the transcript for the Devin Archer testimony. Remember, we knew that was going to be out this week. And so everything so far that I've seen, because I just, you know, I looked this morning, I'm like, all right, what stories are trending? And everyone, my gosh, it's, oh, here, like this ABC poll. I'm going to punch this poll in the face. Nearly 2/3 of Americans think January 6th charges are serious. I mean, I could just go on and on. Like, there's one fawning over Mike Pence. There's literally, it says Trump was seriously salty about the way a judge addressed him. Some guy named Dan Ladenhall, of course he has a hyphenated last name, wrote the headline like he was a register worker at Claire's Boutique describing a product in their store. And then he has... There's all these other, it's all, oh my gosh. Let me just count. One. Oh wait, no, there's these down here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Already we got more. 13, 14. So there's four more now than there was when I woke up of these headlines. That's what's dominating everything. Oh my gosh, dominating everything. In the meantime, we got this testimony that nobody's talking about. And some pretty damning things that have come out of this hearing, his closed door interview, I should say, with House Oversight and Accountability. You have a 141 page transcript. And the piece gets into, or the transcript, his discussion got into everything that from vice president to the time he was president. Because remember, Devin Archer was the business part. He was a business partner and a close friend of Hunter Biden's for a long time. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around the Biden brand, because that features predominantly throughout this. He said at several points in the testimony that the Biden brand was about sending signals to the business partners. It's all about sending signals. And he said that, you know, obviously, you know, you send the right signals, you know, you have doors open, etc. And then you had big time Biden stan Dan Goldman and the transcript, who said, well, the scope of what Hunter can do, well, he said he, but talking about Hunter, the scope of what Hunter can do and cannot do, and that he cannot intervene directly with domestic policymakers and must abide by FARA, that's the Foreign Agents Registration Act, and any other U.S. laws in the strictest sense. He's, you know, was that his approach? And Archer's basically like, no. I mean, he gives a long answer, but it's no. I mean, you just boil it down, it's no. And they kept saying the brand, the brand, the brand. Advertising the brand. That's what hauls in investors. And one of the counsel for the oversight committee had asked, well, you know, you keep saying the Biden family brand. You really mean, instead of the Biden brand, you really mean the Biden family, right? And Archer's like, yes, that's correct. And then Biggs asks in, he goes, you aren't talking. And Biggs really, Andy Biggs from Arizona really narrowed it down even further. He's like, you're not talking about, you know, the brother or Jill Biden. You're specifically talking about Joe Biden. Is that fair? Is that accurate to say? And Archer says, yes, that's correct. That's fair to say. And then they get into the survival and intimidation with Burisma. Now, remember that form? It's the 1023 form with the FBI. And they had Burisma executives. They told this confidential informant. Remember, they had audio recordings. They had an insurance policy, they said. They told this confidential informant that they had paid $5 million to the then VP. And then they gave another $5 million to Hunter Biden. So they gave a $5 million bribe to Joe Biden while he was president of the United States. That's not just according to Archer, Devin Archer's, well, he corroborates it, I should say. His testimony, according to the transcript, and I have the transcript up, according to the transcript, and I might just put this up on Facebook instead of sending it out if you don't have it. But according to the transcript, and this is, he had actually in this, had corroborated that it was done. And the first time we had learned about it was that FBI form, that 1023 that they had to fight. And then there was so much redacted. And they were asking, okay, $5 million bribe, $5 million bribe. And Goldman kept trying to, you know, get around it. And Goldman kept trying to say, oh, well, it's, you know, they, because he was saying that that's why Burisma was able to survive as long as it did. You know, he bribed him and they went after this stuff. And Goldman's like, oh, well, you know, trying to make it like it was an investment. Maybe it was just Hunter's investment. And Archer kept correcting him. And they went back and forth on that. So they weren't able to move him off of that with their questioning. And Goldman wasn't the only one who was trying. And it also got into that 2018. So the speech that we had played where he was on the stage at the it was the Council of Foreign Relations, and Biden was on the stage, and that's when he was bragging about having Viktor Shokin fired. That's the prosecutor. And that was in 2018, and he was boasting that he was going to hold $1 billion of aid to Ukraine unless they got rid of that prosecutor general. And so, and he was investigating Burisma at the time. Biden was saying that he was corrupt. Actually, he wasn't corrupt. He was investigating corruption, and then Biden engaged in corruption to get Shokin fired. And they had asked too, this was the Four Seasons dinner. So they had the Cafe Milano dinner, then they had this Four Seasons dinner. And that's when they were with the Burisma CEO, Mykola Zolochevsky and Pozarsky, who one was the CEO and the advisor to the Burisma board, respectively. And when they were meeting and they were asking Hunter Biden to make phone calls, that's literally at the exact same time that they were under investigation by the prosecutor general, Viktor Shokin. And so Archer was saying in this, in this discussion that they were meeting at this time when they were under investigation. They were getting, his quote was, they were getting pressure and they requested that Hunter help them with some of that pressure. And the majority counsel asked what pressure. And Archer said, quote, government pressure on, you know, government pressure from Ukrainian government investigations into Mykola. And it wasn't like a specific request. We were sitting at the Four Seasons having coffee, and there was Mykola and one of the managers for the Four Seasons who managed that property. And he got into Pozarsky. And he said that Shokin also wasn't the only concern, because they were having issues with Britain and Mexico, too, and the United States. So, and that's when Jim Jordan said, so the request from Zolchevsky, Mykola Zolchevsky, and the other guy to Biden was that, you know, the request for help from whom to deal with that pressure? And it was Biden. Can we get help in D.C.? Can we get help from the big guy? Can we get help? It's always like some kind of phrasing like that. And they're talking about Joe Biden. He was asked again, they mean Hunter? And he said, no, they're talking about Joe Biden. So there's some, I mean, I just don't know how Democrats can look the other way and say none of this stuff matters. And that's what makes me not give. I mean, if I'm being, it's Friday, you know, we've all lived through this week. It's been kind of crazy. You know, if I'm being honest, this is why I don't give a rat's backside about any of the stuff that's happening with the J6 stuff. I think it's all some of the stupidest, most specious, ridiculous accusations that you could cobble together. And I think that Jack Smith is a loser. His biggest claim to fame was having SCOTUS reverse one of his cases that he acted like he was big leaguing everybody about winning, and it ended up being reversed because it was stupidly argued. So you have a loser prosecutor who's desperate and thirsty to climb up that professional ladder, completely fine with being a willing pawn in this white trash administration's in the Democrat Party's, you know, vengeance plans. I'm just, you know, it's just ridiculous. I mean, we all see this happening right in front of our faces, and you wonder why people get so aggravated. Good heavens. Now we'll get into, you know, because some of this I was seeing that because we were talking about not just this testimony or the interview that Devin Archer was giving, and can we get some help in D.C., et cetera, et cetera. I told you yesterday about the Porsche, right? So this is, I believe, Beverly Hills. So it was Wednesday. Hunter Biden was pictured. They were leaving a building in L.A. where apparently they had offices or something at one point. And he's back in Beverly Hills with his Instagram influencer wife, and just, you know, walking around like, and he's, you know, glaring at everybody as they're taking pictures of him, just walking around, just, you know, totally all of the exceptions and passes this guy gets. I mean, think about this. You have the immunity deal that they were trying to build in. They were trying to cheat the court. Thankfully, the judge asked questions. You have the immunity they were trying to build in. You have the FBI intervening on his behalf numerous times. And I'm not just talking about the gun being thrown in the trash can across the street from the school, and the FBI and the Secret Service intervened, took it and hit it, or how FBI and Secret Service got the laptop and then argued with everyone, told everyone that it wasn't real, or about the time that they had to go and get the rental car that he had, that he was driving somewhere in California when he had all of this drug paraphernalia and cocaine and everything else in the front seat, along with Beau Biden's AG badge. And they had to like take care of that situation. They've had to take care of this whole thing, hide and even hide from investigating agents, the tax evasion and the other things that he was coming up for in terms of charges. I mean, I just don't see any reason why any of us should follow any laws at this point. Let's just have anarchy and total chaos. I'm there. I am literally, if on a level of one to Joker, I'm past Joker.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Are you considered to be in Generation X? New reports show that Generation X is not saved for retirement. In this age of social media, do you own your own stuff, or does your stuff own you? Is it time to start making some financial changes to reduce your expenses? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Oh, hey, guess what? Now, it looks like the DOJ and FDA are going after companies that promoted zinc and vitamin D for COVID. You know what? I'm going to make a company and call it Giant Middle Finger, and I'm just going to promote zinc and what's the other thing? Vitamin D for the Rona. Yeah, it's Office of Public Affairs for the DOJ. Permanent injunctions and judgment of over $1 million in civil penalties entered in a case of deceptive marketing. Look, the only thing that we all ever said about this stuff is that it helps with symptoms. But oh no. Oh no, you can't have the mini Putins in the government have
that. They deceptively marketed the damn vaccine.
Yeah, they did, you deceptive marketers. You deceptively marketed basically, which is spit in a vial and pretended that it was going to transfer immunity. There is no place for people to hide today. There is no quarter given, okay? None. Let's see. It's a good gig if you can get it. Steal expensive doors and return them without a receipt. A guy's charged with cheating Home Depot stores out of $300,000 with a door return scam. Okay, why doors? Yeah, but like, that seems awkward. This guy, Alexandra Costamoda of West Hartford, Connecticut, 26, detained without bail. Judge entered a not guilty plea on his behalf. So that's what he was doing. He would take several hundred dollars worth of these doors and put it in a lumber cart, take it to the service department, and you know he would like take them and then bring them back without a receipt and return them to a different store. Because they can, apparently can return things without a receipt, but there are some safeguards in place. So anyway, he got hit with fraud. I mean, it's a door. I mean, it looks like you. Adderall shortages. Have U.S. agencies urging drug makers to boost output? I got to tell you, I think a lot of people are on Adderall that shouldn't be on Adderall. I think a lot of you are just distracted by junk in your lives and you have no ADD or ADHD at all, so stop it. There you go. No quarter given today. We got a lot more happening. Let's make fun of people. Stay with us.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
One day, our children's children will read American history. And can you imagine our reading that James Madison or Thomas Jefferson tried to overthrow the government so they can stay in power? That's what we're looking at. We're looking at American history, and how it will play out is going to be very important.
What in the tartar sauce did I just hear?
You said that out loud.
Is this? He's the male Kamala. He is. I mean, they are the same person. That's Kamala in an Al Sharpton suit. That's all it is. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this first hour, we're just going to go right ahead into it. So, oh my gosh. So that's, I don't know if anybody told him this. You know, because he's saying in this audio soundbite, Mr. Sharpton, he's saying that, you know, it's, can you imagine if Madison or Jefferson tried overthrowing the government? Guys, can you imagine Americans out there? Can you imagine if they had tried overthrowing the government? Can you imagine it? Well, I guess I can't. Shut up. That's okay. Let me just. It's obvious, right? I mean, he knows that, or maybe he doesn't. I don't know.
You may not.
What do you think they did back in, oh, I don't know, 1776? What do you think happened then? Huh? It's a mystery. Who knew? Imagine if they tried over. First off, that was not. If you think, I just got to say, and this is for some of those Republicans out there that push this too. If you think that was an attempt to overthrow the government, oh, bless your little heart.
just bless it. Just bless your little baby precious heart. Oh my goodness. Because that's not what that was. You had, it was like hooliganism. You know, you had some people that were acting like hooligans. And then the other people were like, what's happening? We came here because we saw the food trucks. What? That actually is a thing, apparently. That's not what overthrowing the government was. I still will never forget, like, when they went to Statuary Hall, like, in the middle of Statuary Hall, for no reason, there are these, you know, the little gold poles with the red velvet ropes on them, and a little red carpet, in the middle of this thing. And I don't know why it's in that, it just is. And I guess it's, you know, when stuff is going on with Congress, you have the press that goes in there, and I guess they got to stay on one side or the other. I actually don't know, and I never cared enough to ask. But it was hysterical when they all went in, because you could see from all the video footage, they all immediately found themselves in Statuary Hall, and they were like, oh gosh, there's red ropes and a red car. I guess we got to stay. And they all filed in the middle of it. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I'm like, wow, that's, so they still retain some of the sheep qualities, because they're making sure they stay in the little roped area in the middle. It was funny. Oh my gosh, someone put their feet on Nancy Pelosi's desk. It's just like a revolution. It's just like it. That's not what it was. Tried overthrowing the government. Well, they did. You absolute mental abortion. They did. They did overthrow the government in 1776. You want to hear a fun story about Al Sharpton? Okay, so here it is. When, gosh, this was some years ago, when I was on Bill Maher's show, and I went in, and I had some of my friends that I had worked with that lived in LA that did, you know, political writing and stuff, meet me backstage, because you always want a posse when you would go to the political show like that, especially if you were the only conservative. And I think I was on with that weasel that runs Daily Kos and all this stuff, and then Sharpton was going to be on. I'm like, oh, for the love. And I can't remember who else. Goofy Clinton guys. I can't remember what his name was. Anyway, we ended up arguing about when Clinton bombed a medicine factory in the 90s. Anyway, so go on, you know, and I have like, you know, maybe three or four people with me, because you could bring some people with you and you could be in the green room, and then they go and sit in the audience that is predominantly communist. And, you know, then you go and you sit on stage. And Bill Maher was always nice, except when he repeated some grifter's lie about me on another show, and then he never apologized for it. But anyway, I digress. So we get there, and Al Sharpton shows up with his crew. And this is after he started losing a lot of weight, so it was weird, you know? Like, whenever you see someone who was morbidly obese, like Al Sharpton was, I mean, he looked like that one chick that chewed gum from Willy Wonka. Like, but after she, like, ate the one piece of gum that blew her up. So he's lost all this weight, but he comes in with this massive crew, a massive posse. And, you know, they had craft services, which is what they call the catering in the green room. So he comes in, and I mean, he and his crew just descend on craft services. And one of the people that I was with, I think it was Larry O'Connor that was with me, and he was like, it's okay, I didn't want any cheese anyway. And it was just kind of funny. So anyway, it was just, he was weird. And then when we ended up being on the program, I have a Bible verse I have tattooed on the inside of my arm. And he had asked what it was. And I looked at him, I was like, well, you're the reverend, shouldn't you be telling me this? And then we had like a standoff a little bit about it before I told him what it meant, because he didn't know. And I was like, I guess that means I'm more reverend than you. You can call me Reverend Dana. He's like, that's not how that works. I'm like, it's not how it works for you either. And then Bill had to intervene. So that's basically it. I don't know if you knew, but they ate all the cheese at the craft services table. And he didn't know what the Bible verse was on my ear. He didn't know what that meant. I'm like, well, you're the reverend. You know, is that not in your racial hustling grievance book? Like, what, you know, maybe you got the wrong holy book, sir. But anyway, that's the story about Al Sharpton. Oh, my other favorite show that he did, the episode that he did. Remember when he pretended to be like Mr. Bunsen from like the Muppets? He had this whole lab set up. I don't know if you guys remember this. They flirted with this at MSNBC for a period. And he had like these beakers and all this stuff up, but he was talking about politics. But I guess they thought if they put him in a lab scenario that it would make him look smarter. And it just looked ridiculous. It looked like a damn Muppet segment. It was so weird. I don't know what they think over at MSNBC. He's still there. Can you imagine? if Madison or Jefferson tried overthrowing the king, you would be, yeah, I kind of can. Sort of why we're here, isn't it? Slick. Dang. Good heavens. That is almost, you know what, though? It is almost as dumb as some of the stuff that we've heard from the vice president. Okay, so Kane and I, we are looking for a tinfoil or maybe aluminum. Is there a difference? I mean, I know tin and aluminum. Sorry for the, that's how.
Yeah, I don't know. If it has to be authentic tin in order to work.
We need a foil sponsor.
Right.
So that when we wrap ourselves in foil and discuss like segments like we're about ready to dive into, you know, we're capitalists. You know, we can get paid for it. So, you know, it makes sense. Kane thinks that there is a reason why all of a sudden you're seeing Kamala Harris everywhere. Now, well, you're saying you're suspicious.
Yeah, it was something Juan and I were talking about this morning.
Oh, so Juan's in on it too, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh.
This is Juan's.
You guys sit over there and you guys can, you guys all like gossip.
We have like a, you know, 45 minutes to an hour before you get in here, though. We have our own conversations.
So what do you guys think? What's your leading theory?
Juan,
here?
If you want me to go ahead and, all right.
Okay.
So the theory is that as a plan B, mm-hmm. because it looks like the Biden ship is sinking mm-hmm. a bit, plan B would to put Kamala out there a little bit more right now and pit her against DeSantis. Because I don't think that she would hold a candle to anybody like Trump. I don't think she can hold a candle to DeSantis, to be honest with you. But
no.
I think this is, at least Juan and I think, this is the plan B for Democrats.
You think she's the plan B?
Yeah. Well, who else do they have? Newsom?
Gavin, but he's gotten in trouble here. There's
Newsom's
some stuff, that stuff that's come out about him. We'll get into that. But
he'll need a VP, too.
Well, yeah. Well, she's not going to just stay as VP.
I don't know.
That looks weird. I mean, granted, it would be like, I think it's a like a pity trophy. But anyway, she, where do I want to start with this? Let's start with five. She's talking to the Mongolian prime minister. We have no idea what she's talking about. Maybe you guys can figure it out. Audio sound by five. This is your vice president.
In particular, we will discuss the work that we will do together to strengthen our space cooperation. You and I spoke briefly about the beginning of the next era and for you what that means in terms of your leadership and your vision for the future. And certainly strengthening our space cooperation would be a part of that agenda, including, of course, using our space cooperation to think about how we strengthen the economic prosperity and development of our nations.
Well, I don't know what has happening. What is happening here?
He was just nodding along like he understood.
Yeah, he looked. He was like everybody for a little bit. Just looking at her like, sure, okay, uh-huh. Yeah, all right, I get it, yeah. So that's not the worst. This is one of my favorites. She's talking about gun control here. I've never heard the Constitution described quite like this is an audio soundbite one.
We are confined to what we're able to do in a limited amount of span.
Oh.
What we need is Congress to actually
a limited amount of span. That's what the Constitution is. It's the United States limited amount of span. Because we only have so much span. You know, and we're giving span away. And some people get some span and some other people get some span. Then we are left, Kane, unburdened by what has been with a limited amount of span. There's no more span to give. None.
What about spick? Spick and span.
It almost did sound like she said spam for a moment. And I'm like, I don't know about that. I think there's a lot out there. But no, it was span. Well, we can't do this because we are limited. We are confined by the limited amount of span. So this is like if The Office, the U.S. version, redid Veep, and then you had, what's his face, his character? Chris, his character was Kamala. Really? Golly. It's a limited amount of span. I've never heard the Constitution described that way at all. But okay, yeah. I mean, she's number two. No, Snow. That was the first thing that flew into my mind. Did you see Biden biking because he's on vacation? He biked right past the same place where he fell down.
Yeah.
Literally fell off his bike on a flat surface the last time. And my first thought was, dude, she's number two. Heartbeat away, right as he was pedaling. And it looked awkward. Like, I watch him pedal a bike, and I get the same anxiety in my chest as I do when I see little kids run down asphalt hills. I get the same amount of anxiety. I'm like, oh my gosh, because she's there. It's, you know, limited amount of span. It's the Vice President of the United States. And I mentioned, and we'll get into this, I mentioned a little bit earlier, Gavin Newsom. Yeah, he's apparently getting a little bit of hot water because now one of the illegal Chinese biolabs, you know, the one that we mentioned a few days ago, where it said that there were 1,000 basically COVID mice stuffed into this facility, like a secret out in Fresno, literally a secret Chinese biolab just out in Fresno that was apparently funded by, his name rhymes with Shmavin Musum. We're going to talk about that as we hear coming up. We also have Days of These United States on the way.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
And of course, our small business leaders are leaders in business, and they are also civic leaders and community leaders.
So that is kind of self-explanatory, isn't it? They're business leaders. They're leaders in business. Mm-hmm. And also civics and community leaders. Oh my gosh. That's the Vice President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen. I think I'd rather be attacked by an otter than to listen to her anymore. But we have like a million other sound bites. Don't laugh at the otter thing. That's true. In Montana, an otter attacked 3 women, and one of these women had to be flown to the hospital.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, this otter went ham on these chicks and sent them to the hospital. One of them, anyway. She'd be said, Montana Wildlife Management officials, they're not taking further action. This is some Monty Python stuff. The women spotted 1 or 2 otters. And one of them swam over and whooped their ass. That's what happened. The otters left after the women got out of the water. One of them suffered serious injuries that she had to be airlifted to the hospital. And the other two had superficial wounds. All women are Montana residents. So I love this sentence. The Wildlife Department says it doesn't plan any action against the otter. They said that the animals usually have their young in April. And they have their young in the waterways with them in the summer. So it could be, you know, that she was a mama otter. Man, people are not going to be able to say mama bear anymore. You're going to have to say mama otter. But, I mean, she had, I don't know, like my youngest son has this thing. He's got a list of rules that I've kept over his lifetime. And one of the things is if it's, you know, smaller than you or shorter than 3 feet, you can kick it. Right? And I mean, that's a kickable thing. It's a kickable animal, right? I mean, you can just yeet the thing, can't you?
Well, this one, they said it's 47 inches long, so that's about 4 feet. And it's 20 pounds. This was a hefty, hefty otter.
apparently, so such a shame. They were just tubing down the river, right? I don't like tubing. I like tubing, but I don't like it because your whole derriere is exposed to attack. I have a thing about that. she had to be airlifted. So this otter came and they were tubing down Jefferson River. And it was on Wednesday evening. So you're kind of begging for some trouble, I think. I have a rule, too. And I've grown up floating on rivers in Missouri. When it gets dusk, you get out. Because then I can't see what's at the bottom of the river. And snakes can be down there. They can hold their breath. So anyway, they're okay. But I guess the otter's gotten away. But that's an actual news story coming out of Montana. I still would rather be attacked by an otter than listen to Kamala Harris talk about how, well, business leaders are leaders in business. It's amazing. So coming up, everyone's broke. We're all paying, on average, I think every family, $10,000 more a year because of Biden inflation. But hey, guys, Bidenomics is working. And all of the jobs that had been kind of temporarily closed during lockdown, they're all back. And Biden's claiming them as brand new jobs. It's all better, right? Don't worry about the lowering of America's credit rating. That's no big deal. What? Stick with us. Second hour on the way.
looking back at the body of work, it was, you know, a very big strategic mistake for me to, you know, be involved with him. And some of it was my fault because, quite frankly, I was pitching Burisma Rosemont Realty. And yeah. That ended up, you know, that the genesis of that was me. But obviously, the trajectory of my life would have been far different and arguably far better if I'd never met him.
That's Devin Archer. He's like, yeah, it would have been way better if we just had hadn't done any business with him at all whatsoever in the first place. Oh, man. That's Devin Archer in his ongoing interview. Welcome back to the program. Second hour on this Friday. We've been kind of keeping it silly because it's been a weird Friday, a weird week. Your lovable curmudgeon here with you, Dana Loesch. And of course, you can listen coast to coast. You can also stream the simulcast for the radio program, YouTube, Facebook, and Channel 347 DirecTV. I've got to eject this from my mind before I can go forward, but I saw someone refer to Chris Christie as White Lizzo, and I cannot unsee it now. Kane, I can't get it out of my head now. That's the internet. That's what the internet does to you. So there you have it. Also, we've been following because they have the transcript of the Devin Archer hearing all out. It got into the speakerphone meetings, and I think those are some of the biggest takeaways, too. The help from D.C. to intervene with pressure on Burisma, the intimidation of the prosecutor, the whole Biden brand, which I think we can all say that we are so tired of hearing about the Biden brand. Meanwhile, he's still on vacation in Delaware. He's on vacation all next week, too, isn't he?
Not all next week.
He's on vacation for like 10 days.
Maybe he is on vacation again next week.
I think he is.
But I know the tally is up to 365 right now.
Oh, yeah. He's been on vacation in total for an entire year.
That's almost 40% of his entire presence.
And if you get the show prep, because I send out the radio prep list to you every morning, and it's at Substack, Chapter and Verse, I included that in there because a couple of you were like, show us the receipts. I'm like, I'm not joking. And this is the Washington Post that tallied it. And back in what? Beginning of July, it was already 362. So I think it's over 365 because I think it was like July 7th, he was on vacation for like 362 days. So think about that. Out of the going on 4 years that he's been in office, that's a whole year. Like days. I'm not, you know, not estimations, but like actual days.
For less than 3 years he's been in office.
Most people get, what, a week's vacation a year? Maybe two?
Yeah, two if you're lucky.
Think about how long it would take for you to get 365 days of vacation. Oh, man. Think about it. How long would it take you to accumulate? And you're not even the president of the United States.
Roughly 12 plus years.
Yeah. He took it in under four.
Under three.
The most vacationed president in American history. And he's been selling, we made fun of the Dark Brandon coffee thing. So they decided to, I guess they think this is like an own on conservatives. They're selling it's just him with the red eyes. It's just so stupid. They want to charge you $22 for the stupid mug that's probably made in China. How much you want to bet it is? Democrats have been struggling in small dollar contributions and Act Blue. I saw a story this morning that discussed how Act Blue, that's the a processor for donations for Democrats. If you donate for Democrats, Act Blue is the processor for that. And they found that they had a 30 million drop off now compared to at this exact same time in 2020 in small dollar donations, or the donation that there was a drop off of that. They said 32% of it was apparently like a big chunk of it was like small dollar stuff. That is pretty significant. Well, you could also say it doesn't necessarily translate, Dana. And this is what a smart Democrat would say. They would say, Dana, it doesn't necessarily translate into lack of support for Biden. You know, times have been tough. Oh, so you're saying that Bidenomics didn't work would be my response. But there hasn't really, I don't know if there hasn't really been a drop off in big donor donations, but it's just the small donors. So it could be a combination of Bidenomics not working. I would just think if Bidenomics worked, wouldn't you assume that the small dollar donation would have increased to him? If they thought he actually fixed the economy and it was, you know, everything was great. It fixed it after ruining it and everything was great. I mean, don't you think that that, I mean, I would just, this seems like that makes sense. But we're still early. We're incredibly early. But his campaign, this is the other part of it. You're not supposed to lose momentum. Joe Biden's campaign's not exactly, well, I mean, they're losing some momentum. Now, we told you this headline last, I mentioned this last hour. This secret CCP Chinese associated, basically it's a Chinese biolab, that is located in this abandoned warehouse in Fresno. It sounds like a movie. And according to the pictures and everything else that California Globe has a story on it, where and they had a ton of pictures where it showed like vials of some of the stuff that they had. Like, I mean, this was not a very well kept. This was not a clean lab. Let's put it like that. It was, they had vials of infectious bacteria and viruses, and they stored them in these like gross freezers, and they literally had samples of malaria, and it was written in Chinese, except for one that had malaria, and then it was written in Chinese, and all they had strains of the herpes virus, the bacteria that causes meningitis, COVID, HIV. They had all this stuff. They had tons of either barely living or already dead COVID infected mice in the facility. Hundreds of them were already dead. A ton of them had to be euthanized. And this, it is nasty. They got a tax credit of our tax dollars from Gavin Newsom. They got a nice tax credit of what? A good almost half a million from Governor Gavin Newsom. And it's this Reedley, it's the Reedley Chinese COVID lab. And this was this illegal lab. It was run by a biotech firm called Prestige Biotech. It totally sounds like it's a subsidiary of Prestige Worldwide, which, as you remember, was the unforgettable company that was created by Step Brothers, by Will Ferrell and I forget the other guy's name, it's John C. Reilly. So they said that the CDC had apparently conducted tests on 800 plus chemicals found at the site, over 20 infectious agents present, including strep, all this other stuff I was telling you about. And they're registered in Nevada, but they're not licensed to do any of the stuff that they're doing in California. So they had code enforcement officials from the city of Reedley. They reached out to the president of Prestige Biotech. And the guy told authorities that the company was the largest creditor of Universal Meditech, which filed for bankruptcy. And they had relocated from Fresno to the Reedley warehouse after an electrical fire, and then they ceased operations. So, wow. And a document that came out in 2019, Governor Newsom's Office of Business and Economic Development, the tax credit allocation agreement of $360,000 went to this lab. Interesting. And so this was done with taxpayer dollars. There's no oversight, apparently. It apparently owned the equipment before Prestige Biotech, the company that I guess originally started. They gave everything over to Prestige Biotech, and that was Universal Meditech. And then that was the one that was subsidized by Newsom. And then Prestige Biotech bought it out. They were supposed to develop stuff, tests for COVID at one point, Universal Meditech, but then it went out of business, and then Prestige Biotech acquired the equipment as a creditor. You know what? I was immediately thinking of Bar Rescue. Like, can you imagine John Taffer going in here? Like, let's go and look at how this is being stored. This is garbage. I just do people not care what our tax dollars fund? Like, how do we know? How do people not know that their money was going towards this shadiness? There was a Daily Mail piece that came out, and that was honestly, besides the California Globe, this is really ultimately like the only other media write-up about this that I found. And I only saw it. I saw Daily Mail when I was, you know, Daily Mail, where I hate that website so bad. I hate them. They act like they're conservative and they're not. But they have like news on one side and then they have all the trash on the other side. So you can pretend that you're reading the important stuff when really you're like perusing the trash. Anyway, but they just 2 days ago, they were the ones, they wrote this up. They called it a lab of horrors. They talked about the associations with China, et cetera, et cetera. They had the really bad photos, all of this stuff. But nobody else has written about it. I mean, I would just think that this would be like, what else are our dollars funding? I mean, what was the oversight for that? Gavin Newsom has some questions to answer, methinks. So that's, I don't know. Yeah, and as Kane notes, we're letting China buy up land near military bases. We had Chinese police hubs in major metropolitan cities. We had these balloons that were just floating across the country. I mean, it makes me wonder what, and don't forget, like with the hacking and everything else, then we were selling them stealth tech. Yeah, exactly. Don't forget that. And now they're going to sell basically what they've gleaned from our stealth tech to Iran and Pakistan. So, I mean, what is happening here? Whose side are these people on? I got some questions. What are your thoughts, Kane?
I think he's compromised. Yeah. I think Biden is compromised in a lot of different ways, but especially with China.
And don't forget, then we got the story of two Navy sailors arrested for selling secrets to a Chinese spy.
Yep.
Washington Free Beacon. Two sailors were arrested on charges of handing over sensitive national security material to China. One of the petty officers, Wen Hengzhao, 26, charged with conspiracy and bribe-taking in connection with taking nearly $15,000 in exchange for photographs and videos of sensitive U.S. military information. U.S. Navy sailor, Jin Chao Wei, whose age was not disclosed, he was charged with conspiring to send national defense information to China in exchange for thousands of dollars. We all got questions here. And Zhao was accused of sending his Chinese handlers plans for U.S. military exercises in the Indo-Pacific region. Electrical diagrams, blueprints for a radar system on Okinawa. That's crazy. Security details for naval facilities in Ventura and San Clemente. And then Wei is disclosed. He's accused of disclosing information about the USS Essex, which is an amphibious assault ship. And that's where he served, as well as several other American warships, including dozens of technical manuals that lay out their weapons, their power structure, their capabilities, their operations, the whole nine yards. And it's Chinese espionage. Huh. Interesting. A lot of stuff to call into question here.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so this Tennessee residents are saying their water still smells like diesel after a spill, even though officials say that it's safe, sure. NBC has the story. It's in Germantown. Officials told residents on Thursday they could start using tap water again, but around 150 to 300 homes still report lingering odors. And for a week, they haven't been able to drink or use their tap water, essentially. So, yeah, don't trust your lying nose. Don't do that. I only got to mention this briefly yesterday. A mysterious pyramid was discovered in Antarctica beneath the ice. This is kind of crazy. This is also, isn't this how one of the Alien movies started, Alien versus Predator? Didn't it start like this? Yeah, it started exactly like this. So they said that it's the highest mountain range in Antarctica, called the Ellsworth Mountains. They stretch 400 kilometers. The mountain in question was discovered by the British Antarctic Expedition of 1910-1913. And the pyramid was, they said that they were trying to, you know, the coordinates. People were speculating about the true nature of the location. But they said that the German Research Center found a pyramid-shaped structure located in the Ellsworth Mountains. And so they said, well, it looks a little bit more like a rock. It doesn't look entirely like just a rocky peak. I mean, it has four actual sides. I mean, it's very clear from the aerial images. And it's, you know, kind of interesting. All right. Also, facial analyst says humans are becoming less attractive thanks to with every new generation because of modern diets and evolving sleeping patterns. He cites the sleeping patterns, the orofacial habits. Now, people, it's obviously very divisive, but they say that we're becoming increasingly physically disadvantaged, and not just by sleeping patterns and, you know, the orofacial habits, he says, but also pollutants and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of interesting. They said older generations put more force on their facial bones, and so, you know, we're kind of different. I actually never thought about that. It's interesting. Stay with us. We got a lot more in store.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
That's not appropriate. We're not talking about mob actions. I didn't say that. Hold on a second, okay? Respectfully, these large gatherings, just hold on a second, y'all. I promise you. We have time to talk. It's important that we speak of these dynamics in an appropriate way. This is not to obfuscate what is actually taking place.
Oh my gosh. I know. So this story, this is just such an insult. This is the super woke mayor. This is the new mayor. Gosh, the new mayor. That's right, because what's her face? She's already gone. She's already out. Who was objecting to the fact that someone had used the word mob and talking about mob action. This is Brandon Johnson. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. This past Sunday, they had something like 400 teens, I think they counted, that trashed a 7-Eleven in Chicago. It resulted in the arrest of 40 people aged 12 to 20. And when they were having a press conference on it, someone had referred to them as a mob. You know, they said, you know, it's a mob of people. And he got upset because he did not like the phrase mob action that the reporter had used to describe the mob action of 400 some odd younger adults. And the fact that mob action is actually a legitimate legal term. So he holds this press conference and he's like, oh, yes, you know, it's not appropriate. We're not talking about mob actions. You know, we can't. I mean, to refer to children like baby Al Capones is not appropriate. That's what they were doing, though. They were acting like a mob. It's a completely appropriate description. And by the way, that's a criminal charge. A mob action is a criminal charge. I mean, you can, and it's applicable in a number of different situations, whether it's a group of people that have gathered together to commit a crime or a group of people who actually commit a crime together. It is an actual legal description of a legal charge. So it is not at all incorrect to say that. I mean, he sounded more upset over the description or the way that the reporter legally and accurately described what had been happening than he was over the fact that it had happened and that people had been victimized by having the businesses that they run trashed and their merchandise stolen. I mean, people were running away with armfuls of stuff. And the owner of the trash 7-Eleven said that teen mobs is something that has to be taken seriously. It's not just teens, though. Like I said, 20-year-old was arrested. Up to 20, I think, is what they said. It was whatever, from like age 16 to 20. They said that, after they became disorderly and disregarded verbal commands, multiple verbal commands to disperse by police, then they were arrested. There's like tons of these types of videos that happen. Like that you see something like this comes out like every single weekend. One of the, actually two of the charges, there was a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old that got felony charge of unlawful possession of a concealed weapon because they were illegally carrying. They had handguns. They're under 21. They can't be doing that. So they said that it got so out of hand, they had no choice. They had to arrest people. Oh, but don't you dare call them mobs. Jiminy Christmas. Don't you dare call them mobs. Because that's mean. Can't do that. And you kind of get an idea of why the criminality continues, because you have these elected officials that seem to be defending them. I mean, just that optic right there is problematic. Incredibly problematic. I feel bad for, like, these store owners. My gosh. There was one, what was it? Let me pull this up. Because I think it was AOC that said, no, it's just people that are upset because they're poor and they need bread. There was a story, a few days ago, there was a Gucci store that got robbed? And CBS has the story. They said that they're searching for people who stole like $100,000 worth of designer bags from area Boston stores. The Gucci store on Michigan Avenue had been robbed. I mean, there's all kinds of, every weekend there's something. It's mob action. Again, it's whether or not people gather together and then they're committing crimes or people decide to commit a crime together. It's still accurate. Golly. And you wonder why all these businesses and everybody else are leaving major metropolitan areas. There's a reason why. Because this is, you can't expect protection from people who are more upset with you than for accurately describing the behavior than the people doing the, you know, the crime. And so much of it, too, is in California. Notice that it's all happening in these blue states. There was a jewelry store, broad daylight, in Irvine, California. They broke in and smashed and stole tons of jewelry. Like, cleaned out this jewelry store in broad daylight. You know, because they're just looking for bread. They're hungry. Isn't that what AOC said? Isn't that how Democrats excused it? They're just, you know, it's, they're just hungry. They just need some bread. That's all it is. Oh, my gosh. I'm so done with it. All right, so a few other things to get into. We've been talking about China. We've been talking about a number of things. Some of the 2024 stuff. No one has asked why Vivek Ramaswamy did a total 180 on Trump and J6. No one has asked him this. Why? I mean, I'm curious. He got a little mad at me, I think, when he came on the program, because he was accusing people like Dave Rubin of being paid by the DeSantis campaign. And I'm like, wait a minute, whoa. If you're not, you know, a stalking horse for one particular candidate, why do you seem to fire all of your, you know, why do you fire everything on one candidate only while acting like a surrogate, more as a surrogate than your own candidate for another presidential contender? It's just odd. I mean, do what you're going to do, but just be honest about it is kind of my thought on it. But what I don't get about this is why people like him are not questioned about their 180. Like, I've seen other people, like, what is it, that Tim Pool guy back in 2019 was like, I'm never voting for Donald Trump. Wait, are you never Trump? Like, I'm trying to figure it out. Now you're not? Like, how does this work? Like, why is there never any accountability there? But I'm looking at this. So I don't know if you were aware. I mean, we mentioned it briefly. But I just feel like there needs to be a little bit of honesty in this primary, and there is not any. So he had in his own book, I mean, he had a book out where he talked about all of this. And, you know, in, you know, plain view, like there, you know, in black and white, he's in there talking in his book about how he blames Trump for J6. But yet on August 1st, he came out and said Trump isn't the cause of what happened on January 6th. Yet he condemned him in the days after the riot repeatedly. He said at 4:54 a.m. on January 1st or January 12th, 2021, quote, what Trump did last week was wrong, downright abhorrent, plain and simple. I've said it before and did so in my piece. He wrote in his book, quote, it was a dark day for democracy. The loser of the last election refused to concede the race, claimed the election was stolen, raised hundreds of millions of dollars from loyal supporters, and is considering running for executive office again. I'm referring, of course, to Donald Trump. Conservatives have their own victimhood complexes these days. We are, after all, a nation of victims now. All that differs is whom we see as our oppressors. And the worst victimhood narrative that afflicts modern conservatives is their budding belief that any election they lose must have been stolen. Instead of distinguishing ourselves from the party that strives for excellence and rejects the path of easy victimhood narratives, we've created our own. And then he goes down and he calls him. He says, He goes, I was disappointed when I saw President Trump took a page from the Stacey Abrams playbook. His claims were just as weak as Abrams. What? What? This is from his book. Vivek Ramaswamy's book. Does this Vivek Ramaswamy sound like the Vivek Ramaswamy that you see acting as a surrogate for Trump on television now? Nope. Why has he never been asked about any of this? Why are we all pretending that this doesn't exist? Then he like fawned over Mike Pence. I have great respect for, decided it was his constitutional duty to resist the president's attempts to get him to unilaterally overturn the results of the election. So Ramaswamy, Vivek Ramaswamy, was accusing Trump of trying to overturn the presidential election, called him Stacey Abrams, said he had a victimhood complex, and that he was responsible for J6. How does that square away with what he's saying now? And no one's asked him about this. These people have him on and they give him softballs and kiss his ass. No one asks him about this. Why? Everyone's like, oh, I really like... I mean, if you don't like Trump and you want someone else, fine. But can we make sure that they're consistent or at least can explain why they're not? I just think that's kind of important. Why do I think it's important? Because I feel like he is flip-flopping so he can just chase influence. That's what it feels like. I feel like he's being incredibly disingenuous and he's chasing influence. I mean, how else do you describe this? I mean, my gosh, I don't know when he's never been asked about this. I'm not even getting into the other stuff, the Soros stuff and all of that. I'm not even getting into it. So, or the, what is it? The tracking thing that he wanted to create with Big Pharma. I'm not even touching all of that, or about how he like was supportive of the vaccine. I'm not even getting into the vaccine, air quotes. I'm not even getting into all of that. But I do think that it's incredibly troubling that, you know, he's done a 180 on this and he's out there saying that Trump isn't the cause of what happened on January 6th when he literally tweeted and wrote that it was, like, repeatedly for days. And then he tried to scrub some of his Twitter timeline. Is anybody going to ask about that? Or are we just like going to pretend? How is that not pandering? That's like even worse than Mitt Romney kind of stuff. I just got a lot of questions. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he should come on and ask, like, what changed your mind? You called him the Stacey Abrams of the right. Do you think he's the Stacey Abrams of the right anymore? Do you think that the right has a major victimhood complex? Do you think that Mike Pence is still a great man to respect? And do you still think that the president was trying to literally unilaterally overturn a presidential election? I mean, these are all things that he wrote. Does he think he's responsible for it? Again, these are all things that he wrote. He blamed him for it until it became inconvenient for his mission to pursue MAGA. So it sounds like. Huh. I just think if you're making decisions, you know, you need to have that included in your quiver of information. We have Florida Man on the way.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right. So first up, this comes out of Orlando, Marion County, Florida. A Florida man was arrested because he allegedly stole a lawnmower from a woman's yard, according to the Marion County Sheriff's Office. Gary Beebe?
Yeah.
Beebe?
Beebe.
Yeah. He was arrested Monday, charged with second-degree petty theft, his seventh theft offense in 15 years. So the woman called the police after she said she went home at the time of the theft. She saw the whole thing unfold on her home surveillance cameras. And a guy, they went, just came in, stole her lawnmower and rode right away from the house. Red Craftsman, T2000. And so deputies caught up to him. He said he was picking the machine up from his sister's house. And the homeowner said, no, I literally just purchased this. And she said, this is mine. This is my lawnmower. And even the guy's sister was like, yeah, that I don't know what he's talking about. This is crazy. So they arrested him, booked him into Marion County Jail, $2,000 bond. I just think it's funny he just drove away from it. Just, you know. Also, Fox 35 is busy. A Florida man allegedly fled and eluded arrest at a church because he says a cult told him to. He's now behind bars after he was allegedly spotted by deputies driving in circles in a church parking lot. And then when cops showed up, he fled and eluded arrest, saying a cult told him to do it. John Souza was arrested on Monday. Charges of fleeing and eluding, according to the affidavit. Deputies witnessed the man driving in circles, and they tried to initiate a traffic stop. He drove away, And he said it was a, that was it. That's all he said. This is this $2,000 bond. He went to jail, blah, blah. I mean, he sounds like a nut job. There you go. This, got a couple other ones here. Cool. I don't know if I like this one. And this is a Florida man who apparently, he was arrested for first degree murder because he apparently chopped his wife up and put her in three different suitcases. Oh. Yeah, Delray Beach police. Three suitcases uncovered in the intracoastal waterway. Somebody called 911 to report something strange. And they believe it. They said it was a white or Hispanic middle-aged woman. She's about 5'4". And one of the suitcases had a sticker with the name on it because the guy's a moron. Well, thankfully, they did capture him. You know, they were able to, they found blood throughout the residence, everywhere, throughout the living room, dining room, and a chainsaw that had blood and human remains on it. So he literally, killed his wife and chainsawed her up and put her in three suitcases. And I got to tell you, his mugshot is creep-tastic. He looks like, if I saw that dude without any context on the street, I'd be like, killer. He does, right? Some people look like murderers. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Not all old people are innocent.
Yeah, see, Kane says not old people, none of them are innocent.
That is not what I say.
He looks crazy. He has crazy eyes, crazy face, crazy smirk, right? Just go ahead and kill him already. Go ahead and inject him or whatever you got to do. Let's see. This is a BBC story. They have to, so, you know, they have been doing python hunting in Florida because it's an invasive species and it just wrecks the environment there and it wrecks the ecosystem. These one python hunters, they call themselves the Glade Boys. They hunt snakes every night because the contest begins on the 4th of August. So it actually begins today. It's every year. And they actually have to measure the snakes after they get them. They have to line up and lay, feet to head on the floor to measure how long these snakes are. Because they said sometimes the tape measure ain't long enough. That's terrifying. Hey. Stay with us. We got another hour on the way.
Over the past few years, the American economy has seen an historic recovery from the depths of the pandemic downturn. Over 13 million new jobs have been created since January 2021.
Oh, my gosh, no.
Our unemployment rate stands at 3.6%, near historic lows. Overall annual inflation has declined every month for the past year, and our economy continues to grow. In the longer term, the United States remains the world's largest, most dynamic, and most innovative economy, with the strongest financial system in the world. Fitch's decision is puzzling in light of the economic strength we see in the United States. I strongly disagree with Fitch's decision, and I believe it is entirely unwarranted.
That's Janet Yellen, who's taking issue with Fitch's downgrading of America's credit system from AAA to 2A pluses. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour, this Friday with you, Dana Lash. The issue here, and I love how she tries to, everyone's trying to redefine the job creation. But the job creation, when you lock down the economy and carry out what is essentially financial eminent domain, preventing individuals from going to work and earning a living, being able to pay their bills, being able to pay their employees, being able to actually generate income that is then used to pay off, mortgages, leases, things like that. And then when you freeze everybody's work and no one's going to work and you're counting it as unemployment, and then when everything reopens, which should never close in the first place, but then when everything reopens, then you say that it's a new job that you've created when it was essentially the unfreezing of an existing job. That's what they're doing here when they're trying to cite the number of jobs created. They haven't created any jobs. In fact, there have been, I would say, jobs lost due to the horrible economic situation in which we've been, you know, thrashing around in here for the last several years. But to try to redefine job, I mean, people are going back to their same job. Like, you didn't create this. Like, this was here before. You didn't create that. That's not what happened. But they're trying to offset because it's a horrible timing. Think about it. It's horrible timing for them to be trying to push going into the election cycle Bidenomics and acting like it's working at the same time that you have this downgrade from Fitch's. It's kind of funny. It's just I don't think that they're going to be able to convince people of that. That's not really something that you're going to be able to actually convince people of. I mean, we still added fewer jobs than expected, you know, this last go around. The labor market, I mean, in July, we fell way behind the expectations of economists. And it's suggesting that the economy is slowing down more. They said that the July numbers, although they beat June numbers, they were revised downward to 185,000 from what was originally reported by Bureau of Labor Statistics at 209,000. Original estimates sat around 200,000 with the unemployment rate hovering around 3.6. So the jobs that where they were created, CNBC has this breakdown. They were saying that healthcare led job creation, and then it was leisure and hospitality. So and government jobs were a major dominating factor. So the public sector, the government expanded itself. I don't know. I'm on the fence if I think that should be actually counted as job creation, if it's the government jobs, you know? I don't think that should be counted as job creation.
Jobs should be the ones that actually contribute to the tax base, not the ones that take from the tax base.
Yeah, how are you going to sit here and you're creating something that drains the tax base and you're calling it job creation? I dispute that entirely. Growth in wages cooled slightly. So yeah, that all of this is horrible timing for their whole narrative of Bidenomics that they're still trying to push. They're going to make it a joke. The word's turning into a joke. I mean, because it's just not the reality. It's not the lived reality of all of these people. So I mean, to push that out. And then I think the you know, we talked about that at the top of the week, the downgrade in credit with Fitch's. I mean, that's not Bidenomics. It's not working at all. And we have a couple of other things to hit. Although Kamala says it is working. Audio soundbite 3. She insists that it is working. Listen.
It's a term we're very proud of, I must
sure
tell
you.
You.
I'm sure you are.
Because Bidenomics is working. It's working.
Yeah. Is it, though? Voters aren't buying it. I mean, in fact, it's not resonating. Let me pull up this poll that I had, that I saved the other day. So this comes by, this is a CNN poll. 51%. This is CNN. CNN poll. I feel like I need to say that 5,000 more times. 51% of respondents say the economy is still in a downturn and conditions are continuing to worsen. So whatever they're pushing about this is not resonating with people. They're trying to desperately steer this into economics, which normally, if you were doing well in an economy, that's a position of strength from which you argue when you're going into an economic cycle or going into an election cycle. But they are not in a position of strength. It's worsening. And what's more, it because of all of the factors that I just mentioned, it looks like a distraction from the scandals that very well could threaten any kind of moderate or independent support for the incumbent based upon the perceptions of this two-tier system of justice. They said of this CNN poll, only 37% of respondents actually approved the handling of the economy. I didn't even need to tell you that it's ridiculously oversampled for Democrats, right? Because it's just kind of how it is. They always want to make the either the issue that they're advocating for or Biden, the incumbent, they want to make him look as strong as possible. So I can't even imagine what the real perception is if it's this bad with this poll. Or you also could think, too, simultaneously, you know, maybe they're pushing this out there as a way to encourage him. Oh, you know, it's going to be really hard to battle this narrative. Maybe I should just wash my hands of it, not run, which is never going to happen because he might be old and stupid, but he's vain. And never underestimate an old dude's vanity. especially one who's always been a jackwagon for his entire life and literally thinks that they have this Biden family brand. If that, that should tell you that he is not going to exit this race. He could fall up every damn stair from here until the end of the election cycle. He is still not going to step out. The only person that's going to make Joe Biden, the only thing that's going to make Joe Biden not run is the Grim Reaper. No one else is going to get this guy out of the race. I know we all talk about it and we speculate, but I'm telling you, no one's going to get this guy out of the race. This, again, this is the same guy who pushes the whole Biden family brand. That is some vanity to an unbelievable degree. They think that they're the second coming of the Kennedys. I mean, they're not, but they think they are. And with vanity like that, it doesn't matter how old or how weak he is. He's not leaving that. He's not leaving the race. It's not going to happen. So that's it's problematic. They conducted this. They had over almost 1,300 people nationwide, likely voters. So, but yeah, the financial pessimism is pervasive with the left, and voters are not buying the Bidenomics. No matter what rhetoric the campaign is putting out there, they're just not buying it. I mean, they act like, oh, we had such a bad, we had such a bad situation when we took office and, you know, it was so bad. And but the problem is that the economy had already started turning around and things were starting to move in the right direction, although we never should have shut down in the first place ever. And I know you can say that hindsight is 20/20, but after you were in it for like 4 or 5 months, that's when, you know, you can say that hindsight's 20/20. But you should have had hindsight just, pretty quickly, especially when they started pushing the whole idea that natural immunity was irrelevant. That's when the hindsight should have kicked in. You know what I mean? So I to an extent, I go along with and I'll accept, oh, we didn't know because it was in the very beginning. Because I see a lot of Republicans try to avail themselves of responsibility on this. A lot of them. And they're like, oh, well, you know, it was so early. We didn't know. You know what? That only goes for the 15 days that you said we had to stay home. I'll give you a 15-day grace period. I don't think that the economy should have been closed at all, and there is no grace period for that. And I don't think that any Republican deserves to get let off the hook for that. You should have never shut down the world's most powerful economy. But on everything else, I'll give you the 15-day grace period because you said 15 days to slow the spread. Then after that, because that's when they started saying, well, natural immunity really isn't. That's when your antenna, your BS antenna should have gone up to alert. And that's when all of that should have ended. So this whole, well, we didn't know, that only goes so far. And the way Biden tells such a sob story. Oh, we came in. It was such a problem. But like I said, things had already started to turn around at that point. People were going back to work. And while people were going back to work, there still was job creation because people wanted to go out and they wanted to get out of their house. They wanted to spend money. And then what does Biden do? Let's pass a big tax hike and just kill it in the crib. Kill the growth right there. So yeah, voters aren't buying it. And you're not going to convince people of it. There's also a new AP poll showing that people are not buying it. And that's problematic for them. They've got to really figure out how to deal with that, with voters. And really with moderates and independents. Those are the people, you know, I think it's just as bizarre as you think it is, but those are the people that will ultimately decide the fate of the election. But people aren't buying it. And it's no wonder that people aren't buying it.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Bud Light's plan to win back drinkers, shockingly, is to actually stick to beer. It's from the Wall Street Journal. That's the new plan from AB InBev. They said that they're looking to try to stabilize the market share. Look, I know some people, including Rogan, have said, oh, people need to get over the whole thing. You know what? That's not the sticking point for people. The sticking point for people is that Bud Light never actually said or acknowledged why it was a big issue. Like why, you know, it was a mockery of women in a time when women are really, I mean, it's a mockery of actual women. And that's the issue. They never acknowledged it. You can't have like reconciliation without acknowledgement of what you did. This is not people continuing to want to stick it to them. This is them wanting to kind of slide by and go into reconciliation without having to accept, you know, having any acknowledgement of what they did. So that's the issue. And I mean, you either believe in the culture wars and how policy is downstream from culture, or you don't, and you want to lose every damn political battle that you get into because you don't realize that. This is Sun Tzu 101. People need to read. Also, moving on, the a massive solar eruption slams into Earth, the Moon, and Mars at once, for the first time, all at once, for the first time in history. Astronomers captured the moment that a solar storm hit three planetary surfaces. They're calling for more protections for humans in space. And it hit all those surfaces at the same time. An international fleet of spacecraft detected the outburst, finding the particles were energetic enough to soar through Earth's magnetic field that typically shields our planet from such events. And it pummeled the Moon and Mars due to their lack of magnetic fields. And astronomers fear that could be deadly for future human exploration because there's the significant and unavoidable risk for that. So they said that in particular, sporadic solar energetic particles, or SEPs, generate extreme solar eruptions, enhance radiation levels to insanely hazardous levels, of course. Mark Zuckerberg built an octagon in the back garden to train for the Elon Musk fight. That's according to The Sun, if you believe it. And apparently his wife is not happy about that. She did not like the fact that there's now an octagon in her backyard. And apparently he posted a text exchange with his wife on his Instagram stories. And it says, "Do you see the octagon I put in the backyard?" And she goes, "Yes, I saw it." And he goes, "It looks awesome." She goes, "Mark." And he goes, "We have plenty of yard space." And she goes, "I've been working on that grass for 2 years." It's actually kind of funny. So he posted the text discussion back and forth with his wife. And we'll see. I actually kind of hope that it does happen. He's a blue belt in jiu-jitsu. So he's actually been training. Musk has said previously that what he would do is just lay on them with a walrus move and just lay on them like that. And then that's it. Then they couldn't move. I don't know if that's going to work, you know, because then you get into grappling. So, you know, I don't know. I just don't know if I feel like that's going to be incredibly useful. So, I don't know. We'll see. CNBC says 8 daily habits could add up to 24 years of your life. And if one of those isn't to get off of social media, this is a joke. Diet and exercise, obviously. Not having an addiction to opioids. That seems like, you know, normal. Managing stress. Prioritizing sleep. Eating healthy. I mean, these are like obvious things, right? Stick with us because there could be a trick in this Jack Smith case. Let's talk about it coming up.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
That the border, they're going to be shot stone cold dead.
Yes.
All these deep state people, you know, we're going to start slitting throats on day one.
#Hashtag slitting throats. Welcome back to the program. That was a Florida governor who's in Iowa, right? He's talking in Iowa.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you guys, the weeping and gnashing of the uniparty teeth after that was it's delicious. It's delicious. Because he's talking about, you know, deep state stuff. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, Ron DeSantis is talking about cutting people's throats. No, specifically deep state. Oh my gosh, he's still talking about slitting people's throats. Well, rhetorically, but, you know, If you're asking me if I'm honest, if it's, you know, do you have a problem with it if it's not rhetorical? Seriously?
No, I don't.
I don't have a problem. Am I supposed to feel bad about, you know, people have been trying to undermine free and fair elections? I don't know. I'm just, you know, this is a dumb question to ask. No, they were freaking out over that. Oh my gosh, can you believe his language? You know what? I'm glad that because he's using war language. I mean, you're talking about a bureaucracy that's, you know, really trying to run things instead of the people accountable to the voters. So I'm fine with that. I don't have any problem with that. You're talking to someone. I mean, look who you're talking to. Really? You're going to try to find like some no-no from me on this? Really? Hi, have you met me? Have we met? Just, you know, wondering. No, I like that he's getting aggressive. And I think that DeSantis is naturally more aggressive anyway. But I kind of get the feeling that sometimes some of the folks in his campaign want to hold him back. And I think that's a mistake. I do. think it's a mistake. Just let him be who he is. He's more aggressive. Trying to sit here and mellow him out is bad. Don't do that, because we are not in a time, and I'm not specifically talking about this primary. I'm talking about the, you know, the battle overall against the unaccountability of, you know, these, this government bureaucracy. We're in a time where you cannot be mellow. This is not a mellow time right now. I mean, look at the situation that we're in. Look at the state of things. We have economic instability, which is also contributing to social instability, societal instability, to say nothing of the instability in a couple of different parts of the world. And now we're looking at stuff which we're going to talk more about next week with Africa and Niger and elsewhere, and some very interesting, you know, some of the other stuff that plays into that. Because there's some Marxist movement over there for sure. And then considering South China Sea, the Indo-Pacific region, I mean, we're in a, there is, we have to wrest control back from unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats, and then shore up our presence in the world. So yes, you cannot be mellow. This is not a time to be mellow. And I get that, you know, there are campaign officials in different campaigns that, you know, they think they're like, I have a good idea of how this is going to work. And I know how campaigns run. And they think that they have, you know, that they have a better insight into this, but that's not usually the case. The two biggest mistakes that I see that people make in any campaign is when they run a general in a primary and when they try to get a candidate to be mellow. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. And I hope DeSantis's people don't try to run a general in a primary. And I think it is bad if they try to encourage him to be mellow. What works for some doesn't work for others. Like with Trump, sometimes you need him to be mellow. I don't need him losing his ass on Truth Social every day in multiple posts. Sometimes he needs to take a chill pill. Like, calm your breasts, sir, please. Let's all like take a big, sometimes people need it. It's Friday. Get over it. I'm not Big Bird. Sometimes people need to be told, Kane, am I wrong? I'm going to tell you how it is, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's wrong if they tell DeSantis, if his people say you got to be mellower, or if anybody freaks out because he used that phrase. And I think it's wrong if they're like, oh no, tell Trump to be more aggressive. No, that's actually his issue. Everybody has different issues. So that's the truth of it. So everybody just needs to chill. You can't run a general election and a primary, just like you can't run a primary and a general. Y'all know what I mean by that, right? During the general, you got to think a little bit more about independence. You don't moderate your principles, you finesse your messaging. Big difference. People who think that that you're compromising your principles are either dumb or they don't know how to run a general election. Those people and their hot takes should be immediately discarded because they're worthless. Here's one thing I do want you to watch out for. I was reading an interesting piece that kind of touches on some of this. Author named Jim Thompson. The Jack Smith case. Now, what is one of the things, the J6, this latest indictment with Trump, what are one of the things that we have been saying over and over again? I was having a conversation, had dinner the other night with my friend Kurt Schlichter. Me and my husband and him and his wife, we all had dinner. And one of the things that came up was I had said, you know, there's going to be a conviction. This is not even a discussion. I mean, that is a certainty. He's going to be convicted. Now, that is not a statement of confidence in the charges. That is a statement of confidence in the partisanship of the jury pool. That's what I'm saying. The jury pool where you have, it's like something over 95 or 96% registered Democrat voters, far left voters. You're not going to get a fair shake out of this. It's not going to get moved to a different state or a different, it's not going to happen. They're going to get a conviction regardless of how ridiculous the charges are. Especially because, like, I mean, what is it? The obstruction, was it obstruction or denial of rights? I was trying to see. That's a weird one too. That's just a weird charge. It's like they, going back to like, what, that's like a civil warrior. It's just weird. But, the charges are so weak and they're so reaching, but that's not the point. I mean, he knows that these statutes are not going to fit. I mean, he's trying to find a crime to, trying to make a crime to where none exists. But that's not the point. This, they realize, and there was a really good piece, let me pull this up, that was over at Red State, that discussed Jonathan Turley and Andy McCarthy's absolute evisceration of the flawed nature of the charges. And not just because, not that they just disagree with them, it's centered upon the bad faith, the maliciously bad faith interpretation that is invoked in the application of these federal statutes. Because the Supreme Court, they have the power to, I mean, I think that they may vacate this. If there's a conviction, you could have the Supreme Court move to vacate it. Kane, what is one of the biggest arguments from the left lately?
Oh gosh, that's
as it particularly relates to the Supreme Court.
Oh, that they need to pack it.
If the Supreme Court vacates this, and the left and the media have themselves and are trying to convince others that this is the Supreme Court acting in a partisan manner, what does that do for their argument?
Yeah, it does kind of bolster it a bit.
Exactly. Do you think that Jack Smith is smart enough, or that Democrats are smart enough to make that play? I think they're desperate enough. Are they smart enough is the question. I mean, it's almost irrelevant now because what's happened has happened, and now that's in play. I mean, there was a case over at SCOTUS blog, Ciminelli versus United States, and there was a couple of where they had the opinion, the majority written by, the first one was Thomas and the other one was Alito. And the court reversed these convictions 9-0 because they told the Department of Justice, and Red State had a piece on these cases, that they could not invent new definitions for criminal statutes that were not intended by Congress. And they said that these were fraud statutes, that they were ridiculously invalid. It might be, they might be different cases, but the variables can just be interchanged. It's the same formula. And I think that Smith knows that it doesn't matter how inaccurate the statutes are in terms of applying these to these accusations, this case or whatever against Trump. I mean, it's Washington, D.C. I mean, what was it DeSantis said? They'll convict a ham sandwich, even especially if it's a Republican ham sandwich. I mean, there's a reason why that's a saying. I mean, it's a joke, but it's true. They don't care what the charges are. Oh, you got us something? Okay, we'll do it. They don't care what the charges are. So even if these are ridiculously invalid charges because these statutes are inapplicable and there is Supreme Court precedent on it, well, then you have Supreme Court that could vacate the conviction. Well, then you would have the progressives would have a tool to wind up their base. They're going to wind up their base. They have a new invigorating argument for their side to pack the Supreme Court. And they have a new tool to use to get people to the polls. I think all of this is on the table. And I think that you cannot be certain of anything. So that's something to keep in mind going into this. Because this is, they've already basically done this with two cases. And then, of course, you also had, the Dobbs case. Although the Dobbs case, that reversed Roe because Roe was inaccurately argued to be a privacy issue when that literally had nothing to do with it. And even Ruth Bader Ginsburg was warning the left for decades. Like, you cannot rely on this. It's such a poorly argued case. I mean, there's going to be something that comes in and overturns this. I mean, she was warning them about this forever, but they were so high on their own farts, they didn't bother to do anything about it. They could have taken that whole time to go and state by state, but they didn't do it. So I'm just saying that could be, that might be something that's on the table. Just saying, might be on the table here. Might keep that in mind.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
You know what? What about making a deal? What about Sonny if he makes a deal with Smith?
Without jail time?
And without jail. He says, look, I'm going away. I'm moving to Saudi Arabia. Wouldn't that be good? Just go away. I don't even care if he goes to jail. I don't have it in my heart to punish the guy. I just want him to go away and stop ruining my country.
Shut up. Golly. I just can't. And I don't like her earrings. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour. You know what? You know, presidents, I'm just saying, what if they didn't vacate it or didn't whatever, Supreme Court, whatever. What if he ended up going to jail? Because, you know, presidents can keep their Secret Service even in prison. Does he immediately go in with a gang? Right. I'm just asking. I mean, would you walk in? You got your own prison gang, like, boom, like that? Armed prison gang? Boom, like that? Really? I'm just thinking out loud. I was just thinking out loud. It's Friday. You know, we're just thinking out loud. That's all. I mean, because it's a lifetime Secret Service, right? So what is that? I'm just wondering what that looks like. It sounds less like it'd be punishment. I'm just wondering about some stuff, you know. Next week, one of the things we're going to dive into is how Mexican cartels are exploiting the U.S. government's CBP1 app. I know you're so shocked about this, right? You guys are so shocked that this is happening. You guys did not know. You didn't think that would be exploited. Okay, we totally all thought that it was going to... We were just, like, waiting. Like, it's only going to be a matter of time before it comes out. Apparently, cartels are exploiting the app's security. And they found... Listen to this. They found a way to request unlimited appointments far from the northern Mexico geofence for anybody in the world. Yeah. So, that's working real well for them. Yeah. The whole app. It's working super, super great for them. Good job, guys. Good. Yeah, good job. They really did well on that, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Now that's
all that app really did is just brought those people with false asylum claims into the ports of entry, and then they actually get in, and then they get their little tag that says, "Well, you got a hearing in 2025. We'll never see you again."
Well, you also have the Supreme Court case that said that, you know, that it upheld the lower ruling where you've got to stay. You can't just like come into the United States and be like, "I claim asylum." I mean, there's a process for doing that, and that typically starts at the embassy in the country of origin. So, I mean, this just makes it all, you know, yeah. Smugglers have been openly advertising their VPN services in southern Mexico. So, yeah, good job, good job, everybody. I can't face palming. I heard that with my ear monitors in and everything. I heard that over here. So we'll have a little discussion about that coming up next week as we go into the new week. But yeah, they've been exploiting it, and we knew. So you know, there it is. Yeah, it's not a surprise. How much did we pay for that, by the way? Taxpayer dollars. It's quite a lot,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, yeah. They don't really have a great track record with anything digital. It's like
I'm not
the Obamacare
website.
Sure,
the full
website.
Amount was disclosed. I think they're continuing to work on the app, and I think that increases the amount of money it actually costs. So I'm not sure we even know the true amount.
Yeah, exactly. All right, today in stupidity, sir.
All right, even though we already heard Joy Behar, so I'm going to apologize in advance. It's Joy Behar. She's saying people are having an easier time today putting bread on the table. What the heck?
They sold a table.
The economy is booming.
Yeah.
Inflation is down. The stock market is doing well. People are having an easier time putting bread on the table, etc. He doesn't seem to be getting the credit for that.
What? The credit for that?
The only reason they can afford bread is they sold the damn table.
Right. Inflation's still high. Gas is high. Everything's still high. 16%+. Stop with this.
Folks, I want you to have a lovely weekend. Don't get into politics. Don't talk primary. Don't talk anything else. We will reconvene. I will watch things for you. I will keep you up to speed. And I'll bring you up to date on Monday when we reconvene. I'll be back behind the mic with you then. Have a great weekend.